Record Collections and Recollections. Out of the Box on FBI Radio.
Hey, Emily Elvish with you on FBI Radio 94.5. This is Out of the Box. It's a place where every week we dive into one guest record collection and pull out the stories, sounds, and spaces that have shaped their life. Today, my guest and I are broadcasting from Redfern, which is on unceded Gadigal land. I'd like to pay my respects to Gadigal elders, past, present, and emerging, and extend that respect to any First Nations person listening in. Out of the Box is a program where we share stories through music. First Nations people have been sharing stories across this country for millennia, and I am privileged to be doing so today. Wherever you're tuning in from so-called Sydney, this land always was and always will be Aboriginal land. I'm joined today by artist, illustrator, and future librarian Lucy Curl. From growing up in Wellington, New South Wales, to finding roots in Eora, curiosity and creativity has always underlined Lucy's journey. The track list she's brought to the show today is so nostalgic, and we're finishing with a gorgeous track by the Beach Boys. This song fills me with so much warmth whenever I hear it. Lucy, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, Emily. I'm really stoked to be here.
We're so happy to have you. And I'm so excited to dive into the tracks that you brought with you, the stories you have to share. And I'm really excited to look at how art making influenced your early life. Mm-hmm. You've shared with me that your mum was an artist. What were some of the things that inspired you to create when you were younger?
I think it was just a lot of my mum's use of colour. I was really drawn to a lot of colour when I was younger, and, you know, just like chopping up cardboard from the newsagent and, you know, making something new out of it in the way of collage or drawing, or, you know, I just kind of had free rein as a kid artistically, which was really valuable. Mm. I never really felt like ashamed or uncomfortable of what I was doing, and just endless paper, which was good.
Beautiful. Was it only at home that you were creating, or was it other spaces?
Primarily at home, I think, and my grandparents. I used to do them a lot of drawings, which they've still got.
Oh, beautiful.
Still got a lot of years of art lying around there. So, yeah.
Is it an interesting experience going back there and seeing this sort of journey of your career, like, documented?
Oh, yeah. I love kids' artwork. It really inspires me. And particularly when I've worked with kids in the past, like doing workshops and things like that, it's just... Yeah, that whole thing of the grass is purple and, you know, for no reason, just can be, and that kind of thing, just the full explosion of, you know, things not making sense and being a bit off kilter, but in like a really kind of charming way.
Mm. Would you say you're a very imaginative child?
Yeah, I had imaginary friends growing up, so that kind of fits the bill, I guess. Yeah, and, you know, always kind of playing with my toys and, you know, pretending to be a postman running around the veranda on my bike and stuff like that. Always drawing, dancing, just, expressing myself, which was really cool.
Did those imaginary friends and your stories with them, did they ever feed into the art you were making?
No, not really. They did bleed into my primary school life, though. And then when I went to primary school, everyone was like, oh, you know, they're not real kind of thing, which is true. But, yeah, retired them at about 7 or so, but never really into my work, I don't think.
Yeah. And you grew up in Wellington, which you said was just a bit outside of Dubbo.
Mm.
What role did art and music play in Wellington when you were growing up?
Well, there is a bit of a community kind of art scene, a community music scene, like community radio, that kind of thing. It has its own unique slice of life there, to do with country living and that kind of thing. But I think outwardly from that, a lot of my drawing was inspired by stuff like music and through pretend and, you know, like kind of being somewhere else. It wasn't really to do with anything. Like, it wasn't to do with my hometown. It wasn't to do with anywhere I'd ever been. It was just kind of a very insular world, I guess.
Mm. And did that sense of play, you've said that you were a big music lover growing up. You had the shared record collection with your grandparents and your mum. Did that, do you feel like that influenced the art you were drawn to, the music you were drawn to?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, my mum's record collection was a major influence on me, and I used to be so pedantic about it, like just used to clean them all and put them back in their sleeves, and I was like, you can't be going leaving those around, kind of attitude about it. But it was very special. It did influence a lot of what I listened to today, and a lot of like what I was into as a teenager, like that kind of teenage angst kind of stuff. You know, through every chapter of my life, I think I've always taken a bit of that musical upbringing with me and being around it. So, yeah.
And I'm so excited that you've brought with you Rhinestone Cowboy as your first song.
Mm-hmm.
This track is by Glen Campbell. And you've shared that country music has a really special place for you. Could you tell me a bit more about that?
Well, I think it's special to me because not only am I from the country, but I was so like resentful about being from the country sometimes because I kind of wished that I was in the, wished past tense, that I was in the city, and, you know, I thought about like all this freedom that I thought people had here, and, you know, kind of living that creative life. And as I got like into my teens, late teens, you know, I got to the city. And then I kind of realized, like, you know, it's home. And, Glen Campbell I got into, you know, later in my 20s. But I love him now, big part of my heart.
What was it that drew you to this song in particular? Do you remember?
Well, I was going through some records when I was home a few years ago, and I like plucked out Rhinestone Cowboy, and I was just so drawn to that album cover. Like, it's really magical and the colors are perfect. Like, everything about it is just great. So I hung it up in my room, and then I was like, well, I've got to play it. Like, I can't just hang it up and not know what it is. Then I listened to it, and there are just so many good ones on that album. But this one in particular, it's kind of got that triumphant, like, victory lap kind of feeling about it. And, you know, the light's shining on you, you know. It's just a really, I don't know, triumphant song, very happy song.
It's really interesting to me too that you connected with it when you were sort of looking back onto the place where you came from and finding a new sort of beauty in it. And I love how you're describing it as triumphant, which I feel like would be a really poignant emotion to be associating with that kind of realization happening in your life.
That's interesting. I don't know. I'm just so embedded in my community now and, you know, it's at the forefront of my mind all the time in what the future holds. And, I'm just so glad that, you know, it wasn't that bitterness that I had, you know, when I was young. It's totally changed. And I see the beautiful parts of it all the time.
Do you go back there much?
Well, it is a 7-hour train ride, so not often, but when I do, it's nice. It's like, homecoming. And it's one of those towns where, you know, everybody knows who you are. They've watched you grow up, and it's like, hey, Mrs. So-and-so, blah, blah, blah. It's just like the people that have lived there, you know, their whole lives. And, yeah, just going back and visiting and, yeah, just engaging with everybody again, being a part of it all. It feels the same, which is what is special about it.
100%. A lot of, I haven't seen you since you were this high.
Yeah, all the time.
Let's dive in. This is Glen Campbell with Rhinestone Cowboy. You're listening to Out of the Box. The song was chosen by Lucy Curl, my guest today. You're listening to Out of the Box on FBI 94.5, and you just heard the beautiful stylings of Glen Campbell. That was Rhinestone Cowboy, a track that was chosen by my guest on Out of the Box today, Lucy Curl. We've just been chatting about your art making in your early life, and I would love to have a little look at your experience moving to Sydney. You grew up in Wellington, which is out near Dubbo. Tell me about that experience. What was that like?
Moving to Sydney?
Yeah.
It was very confusing. you know, I'd never really been to Sydney before, like besides a few visits with family, but independently when I'd just turned, well, I was about to turn 18 and just trying to find things in the city and, you know, work out buses and what Opal cards were. And it was so confusing, but so exciting at the same time. Like, it didn't immediately feel like I was in the right place.
Mm.
I had a lot of second thoughts and things like that. But then through going to art school, like, I found so many like-minded people. And I had, like, a really easy kind of opportunity to be like, well, I do want to be here.
Mm.
It is what I want to do and where I want to be. So, yeah, it started off a bit, you know, how you going, though.
Mm. Yeah, and I can imagine you studied at NAS. I can imagine that would have been a really beautiful space to be surrounded by like-minded people and really form that sense of community.
Yeah, totally. And it was even more exciting because I was 18, you know, like it just felt like the world had completely burst open.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like this country town life and then daydreaming about what it would be like, and then you get there and you're kind of treading water a bit, but it's all very intuitive and very fun. And, you know, I just had, well, I still have so many good people in Sydney that, you know, they're just great, great friends.
Aside from obviously the technical and practical skills that you would learn, what were some of the most valuable lessons that you took from your time at NAS?
That's a good one. I think a lot of solitude has done my practice a world of good because I feel like art school is very like go, 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 and a lot of deadlines and a lot of like boxes to tick sometimes, even though it is like a very subjective activity to do art. But I feel like when I got the space in my studio and like that time in my head, it was exactly what I needed sometimes. And also keeping a sketchbook. I've kept a sketchbook since I was about 16 and I still have most of them. But yeah, just keeping on that sketchbook and not ripping the pages out. Because the stuff that I hate sometimes, you know, when you look back at it and it's like, wow, yeah, that I can see where that was going. But, you know, like it's almost good to see that stuff that you're immediately like yuck about but came around to.
Yeah, I've always found the practice of sketchbook keeping so interesting. Do you feel like reflection is a really big part of your practice because of that?
Yeah, totally. Again, I think it's like that inner world and that solitude, that meditative kind of place. That's a big part of what it is, but it's also reflection. Because in building up all that, like an archive of what you do and what you like, and through absorbing, like, I watch heaps of movies, I listen to heaps of music and, you know, see a lot of art, and you need to reflect in order to take stuff away sometimes, like, because otherwise it just is rattling around in your head.
Yeah. You've spoken a bit about the music that's inspired you, and I love the common thread that is going through the track list that you brought, but I'm really interested, what are some of the films that inspire you as well?
Gosh, there's so many. I can't even remember some major picks off the top of my head, but I love 80s horror. I love like all that jazz, Whatever Happened to Baby Jane, you know, RoboCop. I love a bit of like the Evil Dead movies. Like, it's a lot of kind of silliness in amongst it all, but there are some serious themes sometimes, or some serious kind of conversations or thoughts that are, you know, being presented to you. But I think it's that element of just like having that playfulness there. That's a big part of film for me.
What advice would you give to someone who was wanting to pursue art?
I think that would go back to the sketchbooks. Yeah, just keeping a catalogue of what it is and just, like, drawing a lot. You know, I wanted to dabble in guitar or, like, other musical instruments for a while, and I kind of had the realisation, like, that everybody that's really good at it is people who have just done it heaps, like, a lot of hours and a lot of time. and like a drive as well. And whilst that is like similar to art making, like it was just heaps and heaps of drawing and kind of the same stuff sometimes, but like really kind of feeling it out. And you know, that thing again about not ripping the pages out, mm-hmm. and just playing around a bit, like not getting over the fear of the blank page.
Mm.
Yeah, that was a big one.
Was illustration your primary medium when you were at school?
Yeah. I always did drawing. And my lines are like very, I don't know, straightforward, and it's not very complicated what I do, and I don't really labour over it a lot because it doesn't really feel like a laborious practice for me in that way. Like I wish I had more patience and more time so I could sit on an artwork for more than an hour. I'm not really built that way. Drawing is my primary thing, but I also, you know, dabbled in a lot of embroidery, which is kind of the opposite of what I said, but I enjoyed it for different reasons. So, you know, like moving through those changes and kind of following that thread that pulls you in a direction, because you can always go back. Like, you can be like, I don't like that. But when you kind of push something to its capacity, it's kind of valuable sometimes what you find, in a good or bad way.
Mm. Did embroidery, you were saying it's so different to what you were experiencing or practicing with your illustration. Did you find that it gave you that space to play with those more, I don't know if rigid's the right word, but very like disciplined kind of forms of art making?
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, I think that there's a lot of conversation around like textiles and embroidery that involves craft and like that history of craft.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that also goes into, you know, the naive and the playfulness, and like you can, like craft has that connotation sometimes, but it is very like technical. It can be very like multi-layered and complicated. And the stuff that I made again with embroidery, you know, it wasn't laborious, but I just wanted to push myself to be a bit more regimented, like a bit more meditative, a bit more aware of what I was doing.
Mm.
And there was a lot of hours in there, but I don't know, it awakened a different, it added a layer of complexity to me that I think I needed at that time.
Mm. I'd love to dive into the second song you brought with you today. This is Kidney Bingos by Wire. Why did you choose this song to play?
I love Wire. I think they're a really, really great band. But, you know, they had like their kind of punk roots and, you know, with Pink Flag. But then this song to me is just really whimsical and, you know, just there's something that really lifts my spirits about it, and it reminds me of my 20s, really. That's what it makes me think of.
I'm loving the sense of play that you're finding in a lot of this, especially this song. I'm so excited to dive into it. When did you first connect with this one?
I think I was just going through Wire's Discog on Spotify, and this album was one that really struck out to me. But this song, can't wait to hear it.
Let's dive in. This is Why with Kidney Bingos. You're listening to Out of the Box on FBI 94.5. That was Wire with Kidney Bingos. You're listening to Out of the Box on FEI 94.5. I'm joined by Lucy Curl today, and we were talking a bit about your time at art school, your early art making practice as well, and you've just illustrated your first novel. I'm really curious to know what that experience was like, going from illustrating your own work to illustrating for someone else's literature.
Well, the opportunity came around through, like, I'd say my mentor and good friend. Her name's Anne, and she was my childhood speech pathologist when I was younger. And we're still friends. We're really good friends. But she does a lot of community work, and, like, you know, she's a great light, and she enriches the people that she's around. But she did this kind of program about neurodivergent people and writing kind of stories and using your words and using your expressions and kind of finding different ways to communicate in writing a story or telling a story. And so the book that I illustrated was for a guy called Dom, and his story was called Tom's Space Adventure. And it kind of talks a bit about language and like that, you know, the difficulties that come with communicating sometimes.
Mm.
And so when I read the story, I was like, this is really funny. This is really great. Like, it was so natural to come up with stuff that connected for it. And yeah, that thing of, you know, not really thinking of the ideas, I was like trying to meet, well, it's that compromise, I guess, between someone who's written the story and then I'm kind of doing these sketches and trying to find that medium of like, is this what you envisioned, but what are we going for together? Mm. Yeah, which was cool because I think in the end, I don't know what he was picturing, you know, it was in his head, but I think we all liked the outcome and the story, again, was just great.
Yeah. And I can imagine when you connect with a text, even if it is topically a children's book, when it's dealing with something as nuanced as communication, I can imagine when you're illustrating and coming up with a way to visually represent that, connecting with it would be a really key part of that experience as well.
Yeah. And, you know, this was after a bit of a period in my illustration where I was at like a bit of a writer's block,
mm-hmm.
in a way, like an artistic block. And I was kind of thinking, do I have, like, can I do it? You know, because I just hadn't thought, I couldn't think of anything on my own. And so just picking up like the pencils again, and there are parts of watercolor in there, which I was never really the best at. Like, it's not my go-to medium, but like we wanted that feel of it being really atmospheric and, you know, in space. It's a space adventure, you know. And so it was really fun kind of coming up with that character of Tom and then all the spiders, like the spider monsters in the book and things like that. And I want to illustrate more books in the future. I mean, probably with Anne, but, you know, in other ways as well. It was really fun watching it start to finish.
Mm. And it's really interesting to hear, too, that you turned to a different medium with watercolor after this period of artist's block. Is that something that's happened to you before?
I'm trying to think. I mean, when I picked up textiles, it was I dropped out of NAS for a year, and was that classic hospo waitress spec, because I was thinking, do I want to go to art school?
Mm.
I'm not very decisive. I'm not a very inherently decisive person. But, you know, in that year, I came back and having that break from painting, because I was in the painting department, and I came back and I was like, but what if I just switched it up in not the canvas, but, you know, using that same element of fabric, but like branching it out for me to explore, you know, not in the way to be progressive, but it kind of happened naturally. So yeah, maybe, I guess, yeah, that's a good parallel that you've made, I guess.
I'm also really curious to know, where do you often find your flow state when you're making art?
Alone.
Yeah.
With my headphones on. Yeah, I don't know. It can feel a bit trancey sometimes, but I think that's pretty common with a lot of artists. Yeah, it's just kind of in my own space. And I feel like the first few drawings, it can be a bit rickety. And I don't know unless I've got something that I'm really thinking about, it kind of gets to that point where it's like 3, 4, 5, 6, whatever. But then after that, it's kind of, I know when to stop. And knowing that time frame of like, okay, I think I've done what I need to do, and you know, I'll pick it up again another time. But I rarely ever revisit the same drawing. It's just like out and that's it.
Yeah. Is it ever difficult to pull yourself out of those states and to say, okay, this is finished, I'm happy?
Well, yeah, there's that thing of just making a lot of art where through art school, of knowing when to stop as well. And it feels like a learnt skill in a way, like as listening can be, or as, you know, anything else. It's, working with your own rhythm and what feels most right for you. So, yeah, it's not something that I struggle with too much anymore, because my drawings are very simplistic. So, you know, and even if I do push it a bit, it's not often for the worst. It's, you know, redeemable, I guess. Mm. Yeah.
And has finding your own rhythm, has that been a journey that's kind of stayed with you? Is it a constant thing that you're learning and practicing?
I guess so. I don't know. There's that thing of... Oh, I don't know if I know how to answer that one. finding my own rhythm. I guess it's like a lot of other things influencing me, like knowing that it's not me alone. It's kind of the world that we're in. It's like people moving around you and, you know, being a part of like a greater thing. It's even though finding your own rhythm like sounds really introspective, to me it's more about outwardness and being a part of stuff and getting involved in the way of people and, you know, life. That's kind of finding a rhythm in your practice, exposing yourself to stuff.
Yeah, that's really interesting. Where are you finding those sources of curiosity?
I go to a lot of gigs. I love live music. And I love hanging out with my friends. I love talking to people. I mean, I'm doing my librarianship at the moment, which has just absolutely set my heart alight. Like, I'm so passionate about it. So it hasn't been too hard to roll with what I'm working on, because it just feels like the next right thing to do, which I'm pretty lucky to have found at this point, you know.
I'm so excited to learn more about studying librarianship and that process for you. But before that, let's dive into your next song. You've chosen one by Cleaners from Venus. This is I Can't Stop Holding On. Why did you choose this song to bring?
Well, I love Cleaners from Venus. They're one of my favourite bands and have been for quite a few years. But I think this song to me, at the moment, it's making a lot of sense. Because I'm the oldest I've ever been, 25. And... you know, that thing of like, wow, through life's blows and stuff, like it's just got the most jangly sound to it, but it's almost a bit somber, you know? It's a nice medium of like those minor parts of it, and I don't know, just feels right, feels right now.
Let's dive in. This is Cleaners from Venus with I Can't Stop Holding On. You're listening to Out of the Box on FBI 94.5. You're listening to Out of the Box on FBI 94.5. That was Cleaners from Venus with I Can't Stop Holding On. I'm joined today by Lucy Curl. We've been chatting about your practice, and I'd love to look to some of your present work and what you've been up to. You've been studying to become a librarian. When did your love for librarianship begin?
I think it seemed like the right path for me. Well, I mean, I've always been a fan of the library, always had a library card, and, you know, a very frequent visitor to my local library in Wellington. I used to burn a lot of CDs onto my family computer from there and think that it was somewhat illegal, which it isn't. But yeah, just always borrowing books, engaging with the library, like during school holidays, like, you know, knowing my librarians as people. Yeah, so I always had that there, but I think I was looking for something next to do after art school, because I was like, you know, I've been in hospo since what feels like my whole life, and I want like to engage with the world and this stuff again. So I was kind of thinking about teaching, I was thinking about social work, I was thinking about like arts admin, arts therapy, like you name it, I've probably thought about it. And then someone was like to me, why don't you like think about librarianship? And I immediately was like, oh, that would be so much fun and that'd be so interesting. And the only like doubt in my mind was like, do I reckon I could do that? And then I was like, well, it's already everything I've ever thought about. like a librarian's role in the world is all those things I was just talking about, you know, like educating and being there for people, like creating opportunities and being like the most accessible place in the world, and like engaging with art, engaging with all these different spaces and different communities and different cultures. Like, it is kind of the, I don't know, just such a warm place, you know, why wouldn't you want to do it? So yeah, that's what I'm doing.
And you told me off air that you're about 7 months into your degree?
I started formally in October, I think. So yeah, that would be over, 7 months, I guess. Yeah. But yeah, it's really tech, you know, libraries isn't all books anymore, which I think is something like when you hear librarian, you're like, oh yeah, you know, so giving people fines and, you know, stamping books and all that kind of thing. But it's very multifaceted. And I want to work in a public library. That's not even to, you know, speak on academic libraries or data entry or, you know, records, like all these worlds that you can explore with librarianship. But yeah, public libraries are very public facing. And that's what I wanted as soon as I went into it.
Is it that sense of accessibility and community that's driving you towards public libraries?
I think so. There's this quote that I read early on in my degree, which was, libraries are a place where it's warm when it's cold outside and where it's cool when it's warm outside, you know. I think I said that the right way. But yeah, it's pretty much speaking on just there's no obligation and there's no expectation of anybody that walks through the door. And, you know, you can be there from the minute the door opens to the minute the door closes without any hesitation, you know. And there's just so much place for libraries in the world. And, you know, that's really for nothing. Nothing asked of you. It is that accessibility for me, because in being from that small country town kind of space where I grew up, it's like you can see what resources are there and what aren't and where things can be improved, like what's lacking, what could be worked on. And it is very apparent because you're in like this community that's working together, and sometimes with help, sometimes without help. And yeah, it's just about keeping doors open for people. Yeah.
What's been the most unexpected thing about librarianship that you found in your studies so far?
Oh, it is so tech. Like, we're talking about metadata and that kind of stuff. Yeah, no, I can't get my head around it. Like, in my illustration, I'm lucky to scan something properly without something going wrong. So, you know, when it comes to, like, can you fix the printer and how do I use this website, I'm not going to be the most useful librarian for now, but I do want to become more tech literate. So, you know, and there are so many, like, library databases and stuff where most library collections, like, even though you see all the books, like, in the flesh, there's so much more online as well. So you got to be tech, and I'm going to rise to meet that in due time.
I remember, this is a bit of a tangent, I remember watching a YouTube video, I forget the name of the facility, but it was essentially a library or archive for artist books. And I remember them like talking about the process behind it and the conservation that goes into it. And it blew my world open. I was like, I'd never realized that that's how deep a librarian's role went and a curator's role went.
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah, it is that complex sometimes. But that wasn't, you know, but when people are like, oh, you need a degree to be a librarian, that's one that I've heard a lot. And in a way, I'm like, yeah, I can see why you'd ask that. But yeah, no, it's true in some respects. Because, yeah, there's just a lot of hats that a librarian wears. It's not the stuff that you see sometimes.
Have you started doing any practical work in the space, or does that come post-degree?
There is a professional studies kind of, I think it's called that, like placement, pretty much. in the next few months, which is cool. I have thought about volunteering. Like, there are a lot of libraries where you can volunteer and be a part of it, but I'm kind of behind on my schoolwork, so I need to keep up with the homework. But I would love to be there, you know, just to get a sense of what's there, you know, because I can imagine it and I can daydream about it and I can talk about it, but I guess you don't know until you're right there helping out.
Do you have a dream library that you'd love to work in?
I don't know. I'm kind of split on this one, because part of me wants to go back out to the country and, like, you know, just build a life and help the communities there. But part of me also just wants to go anywhere else, or it'll be in Sydney. Like, I'm in a million headspaces at the moment. So yeah, I'm gonna see where it takes me. I'm open to anything.
Yeah, I wonder how broad a librarian's role is. You mentioned about filling gaps in knowledge and there being space for librarians to do that. I wonder how much influence and power a librarian would have in bringing those texts and bringing those resources in.
Yeah, no, true. Well, I don't know, because, you know, libraries are so intertwined with government bodies and things like that. It is, you'd want it to be like a self-relying kind of thing, but it's not. But I think librarians in that space, and libraries in general as a greater institution, they kind of bring, like, workshops to people. They bring opportunities to people that aren't necessarily, like, what you could put money on, like a value on. Like, a lot of, you know, job skills, a lot of, like, you know, you can print out anything for free pretty much. It's, yeah, even though more resources can come, I feel like the independent space of the libraries and who's running them, people who, like, are seeing the needs of the community as they walk in, like, yeah, it's providing a lot already.
Are there any people in the space who you admire as well?
Yeah, we had a librarian, our town librarian, in Wellington. His name was Mark, and we used to call him Bookmark. I guess I respect him a great deal.
That's a great... I hope he loved the nickname, because that's beautiful.
Yeah, I didn't coin it, but I think it's great too.
Let's dive into the next song you brought with you today. This is a track by Norma Tanaga, I'm the Sky. What connects you with this song?
Well, it does have to do with the country, actually. I was on a road trip with my partner Michael, and we were just seeing all these, like, beautiful green hills, you know, and we were playing a lot of Norma Tanaga, and then, you know, this song came on and everything just felt, like, so beautiful, you know. It was that thing of, like, yeah, life is happening. This is amazing. You know, it just was the right time, the right place, and it reminds me of true love. What can I say? Oh. No, true love.
How long ago was this road trip?
Probably a year ago, something like that. I really love this song, though. Like, if you're listening, it's I hope it's something that can uplift your spirits as well. Definitely uplifts mine.
Let's dive in. This is Norma Tanaga with I'm the Sky, and I hope you can imagine a beautiful road trip as you're listening in. You're tuned into Out of the Box.
I'm the Sky.
That was Norma Tanaga with I'm the Sky, a beautiful gossamer track. And you're listening to Out of the Box. My name's Emily Elvish, and I'm joined by Lucy Curl today. We are nearly at the end of our show today, but I've asked if you could bring a track along that reminds you of someone special in your life, and you've chosen God Only Knows by the Beach Boys, which is such a warmth, light-filled track, and anytime I hear it anyway, it just makes me feel everything all at once. And I'd love to dive into the story behind it. Could you tell me a little bit about that track and what it means to you?
Well, this song goes out to my nan and pop, who kind of raised me a lot. They had a very big influence on my whole life, and they still do. But my pop used to completely rinse this Beach Boys album that just used to play all the time. And I loved it then when I was growing up, when I was 7. But then as I grew older, I was like, wow, the Beach Boys really are it. Like, they go through so many different, like, moods and feelings and situations. And, you know, it's all about love and optimism, I think, even when things are really, really rough. And my grandparents are just so special as people, you know, not even just for the role that they played in my life, in my family's life, but my nan had a cafe for 25 years called the Cactus Cafe and Gallery, and it was in an old school, and it was just the most beautiful place on earth for me growing up. A big part of my life and a big part of the community, but my nan is just the most generous woman, the most caring woman. And then my pop, he's been a pharmacist for, I think, 63 years. He's 83 and he's still working, which is, everybody that hears that is like, that is mental, which it is, but he is so grounded and, like, very stoic, but also very gentle. He's got a very gentle spirit as well. And I think just watching them as people, like people who have worked so hard and who give so much to people, like, without reservation, I don't know. I'm always inspired and in awe of them, and they've been with me every step of the way. Yeah, they mean so much to me. So even though, yeah, like, the Beach Boys, like, it is that thing that I think of when I think of them, but I also think of so many moments where the Beach Boys have saved me too. They're my favorite band, and about my favorite people too. So, yeah.
When you find yourself listening to this song now in your current life, where are those moments that it pulls you towards that track?
I think a lot of grief in some moments, like through moving through grief in my life, but also, like, just resilience, just like, not in a thought out way, but just that like almost hopeless optimism, and acknowledging the people around you and just being like, wow, you know, like, I'm so grateful for just having you in my life. It's all of that, but I think, yeah, the Beach Boys are just overwhelmingly and, like, hopelessly optimistic, and I thought that I was a pessimist at one point in my life, but I don't think that anymore. yeah, I think that's where my head goes.
What are some things or lessons that you've learnt from your nan and pop over the years?
Oh, gosh, too many. I guess, you know, just being there for people. Like, my nan and pop, in being in a small town, they kind of know everybody and have grown up with everybody. Like, it's still very much in, everything's in its right place. But at the same time, like, you know, there are people that my nan and pop reach out to, and they're like, oh, so-and-so's had a wedding or had a funeral, or, like, I'm volunteering at the old people's home, or, you know, like, just all this stuff. Or my nan, in being a cook, you know, is like, oh, I've made, like, a bunch of scones for these people, and then afterwards I'm going to visit this person and that person. Like, just so outwardly and, like, unreservedly giving. Mm. And I think that's, like, something I want to carry with me, you know. Mm. About lessons I've learned, I don't know. But stuff that I admire about them, there's heaps.
Mm. And you mentioned that when you hear the song, it brings back those memories of being with them. I'm really curious if you've mentioned, like, the pharmacy that your pop worked at and your nan having the cafe as well. Do those images come to mind when you hear the song as well, those spaces?
Not as much. Mm. I think it's not so much localized to those spaces, mm. not this song in particular, but I feel like the Beach Boys, for me as a band, it does feel like homey. It feels like family almost. I mean, that sounds so lame, but it's true. Like, I'm not saying that the Beach Boys are my family or anything, but You know, I don't really think about certain places or spaces. It's just more that warmth that they, even you were talking about, you know, that warm lightness. I feel the same. So it's more about the vibe.
Lucy, thank you so much for joining us on Out of the Box today.
Oh, thank you. It's been a really special conversation, so thank you.
Let's dive into your last song. This is God Only Knows, The Beach Boys. You're listening to Out of the Box. Lunch will be next up.